Paddock is a training and exercise space for sport, education, and performance. Each week, we look to grow ideas and innovation through conversation from beautiful Auckland, New Zealand. All right. Good morning, all. I'm really, really excited this morning. We have Michelle Parsons, better known as Mitchie to all of us. First of all, an extraordinary woman, in sport. Having said that, she's also my boss, which is fantastic as well. But today we want to talk about coaching, and Michelle is an extraordinary coach. She's a great coach educator and with a tremendous background in netball. For our international audience, netball is a sport practiced in New Zealand that she'll probably talk a little bit more about, but she has had many years of coaching experience, also strong involvement in cricket, if I'm not mistaken. I think not a lot of people know about your cricket coaching background. She has coached at the higher level and continues to coach at a higher level of netball, and has worked strongly through development grades in netball and working with what we call the development years of young athletes. That's my brief introduction of Mitchie, but Mitchie, thank you so much in your really, really busy schedule for having time to do this podcast. But before we get going, you give us your introduction, because it's really important to actually know who we're listening to.
Kia ora, Fran. Ko tutu mo te maunga, ko wairoa te awa, ko ngā tau kamata whaoroa te waka, ko ahipirihama, ngā tānui tuku tūpuna, ko ngā pui tuki iwi, ko tuire tuki marae, ko Michelle Parsons tuku ingoa. I have been really fortunate to be born and bred in South Auckland. My home is Papatoetoe and did all of my schooling through there. But my affiliation that I just explained was actually to the north. My mother is from Daigabu Te Kupuru area, and that's where my whānau affiliate to. And my whole childhood, and the reason I got into coaching is because of my parents. And I look at my continuum of coaching is because of who my family is. My mother is the 14th of 16. She is from a huge whānau, and my father is an orphan. So he was raised in the Catholic foster care system, so he had no one. So I've got this huge family on one hand and someone who had no family until I was born on the other. And one thing they always instilled in me from literally the time I was five was to be involved, and whatever I do, to do it to the best of your capability. And they were always my greatest cheerleaders. They still are. And they're the reason that I continue to do what I do. I want to keep making my parents proud of who I am and who they've helped me be. And so I was diagnosed with asthma when I was five and I started primary school, and I used to read a lot. I still do. My parents bought encyclopedias because I love reading. And for people who don't know what those are, that was before Google. So when I joined school and they were worried about me reading so much and found out I had asthma, the first thing they did was get me involved in track and field. And that's my first love. That's what I first started coaching. When I was 13 years old, my mother would, before any of our coaching sessions started, would insist that I coach the 5 to 8 year olds. So I started coaching track and field with juniors, which, as you can imagine, is absolute chaos. But what it did was it instilled in me an appreciation of whoever I've had coach or lead me, that in order to grow, you have to help other people too. And great leaders help other people be great. So from the age of 13, my mother literally forced me into coaching, and I've been doing it ever since. She was very forward thinking and got me doing qualifications. So I was the youngest qualified level 2 national jumps and sprints coach simply because my mother made me do it. So my background into coaching, starting with track and field, and I think one of the best parts about that is track and field lets you live in the moment. You know, you win a race, but you let it go because it doesn't make you a winner. It just means you won in that moment. And then you go to something else and you might not win, but it was only in that moment. And I think one of the greatest things I learned from track and field was to be in the moment. Winning doesn't make you a winner. Losing doesn't make you a failure. And I've had to carry that with me. I think it's helped my resilience because, you know, anyone who's involved in sport knows it's not always easy. So my foray into coaching started very young, but I'm really grateful for the fact that I've had the parents that I have who have encouraged, endorsed, and helped me grow and really put me into that position.
Really interesting. A couple of things that you've mentioned about the coaching network and how that's constructed. Starting to coach at an early age, the value of that and how that can help us, but also the understanding what we call the ethos of the coach, the network, the environment of which the coach is in. The coach is not just the coach with the players in the competition or in the training environment. He's a coach in his complete life, and the support that the coach needs from, like you were saying, the family. Many times when we think of coaches nowadays, we think of, I have to ask my wife for permission so I can be away all of Saturday, or to actually take on the team and be long hours away from home. My family needs to have a lot of understanding for that. And it's something that many times outside of sport, or when we're taking on coaching roles or younger coaches, don't take into account how we need to actually set up our support systems to actually be able to take on coaching responsibilities. And like you said, coaching is not easy. The stress and the impact that sport has on the coach itself, and how that can affect that extended life of the coach outside the playing field or court. Can you talk a little bit about that to us, about the importance of that sport? And I know that you're a very busy coach at the moment, and you continue to have a very supportive family around that.
Oh, yeah. And you're right, friend. You can't do it unless you have got a great support network, just like athletes. You know, we talk about athletes' mental health support. Coaches need it too. And sometimes coaches are coaching in isolation. And that's why the further you go in the athlete development pathway or performance pathway, the better the support is for the coach. So those who are starting off at grassroots, who are on their own, you know, they need that support as well. And that ability to understand how what they are doing doesn't consume who they are. Your reputation isn't who you are, it's how people see you. Your character is who you are. So one of the things that I've had to learn on that journey, and I'm still really bad at it actually, is celebrating success and being able to learn from what hasn't gone well. This season, for instance, we made the national final, and it was all over TV, you know, us losing. We went in as the favourites and we lost. Now, I still haven't been able to watch that game. I still cannot. And the head coach, you know, Temapata, was calling me going through it. And she goes, Mitchie, have you watched this? I went, no, I can't. I literally will look at snippets, or I'll think about what happened. And in particular, I look after defence and I'll be hashing that. And I will thrash myself about what could I have done? How could I have changed things? What didn't I recognize? What signs could I have seen that would make me change what we did in that moment? Next time this happens, how would I approach it? And yet when there's a success, I move on really quickly. It's almost like, ah, oh, cool, relief, tick, we won. And what am I doing next? So I think what I've had to learn is to have a better balance around celebrating what went well. Not just going, we won, yay. It's actually about what did we do to get there, you know, reflecting on our preseason and what we built in that time that got us to the point where we won that aspect or that competition or that national title. Whereas I do that when we lose. So I know that I need to have a better balance. And the support network that comes with that means, you know, you need someone who understands that when you lock yourself away and watch video, or when you don't get home till 9:30 to 9:45 at night, and they have your dinner waiting for you, and they let you, you know, offload when they're absolutely gone, and you're blah, 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 to bring yourself down. You know, the support network for our coaches, it's not just about in that moment, it's actually about a whole season of moments where you need someone who understands that journey and understands the commitment and how much heart you put into it. And that's why I think where the outcome from the Olympics and the outcome from the Cycling New Zealand investigation into our athlete who sent that awful message from her personal tragedy, there also needs to be a thought around what we're doing in that coaching management space. I think I've been really fortunate that as I've come through, I've had really cool people around me. I've had amazing people whose learning has helped me. But when I look at some of the people who are doing all of this work and maybe doing this on their own in isolation, that's where these coaches' communities are really important. And I think that's what's happening. There's now, it's not just about your sport, it's a collection and a community of coaches working together and learning from other coaches, not necessarily assigned to your sport, but who are going through the same thing. So there are different coaching programs and then coaching collectives, and then organizations like Counties Manukau, CLM, you know, who bring together all the different sports to try and help the coaches share. So for me, the resilience doesn't come from being on my own. The resilience comes from the support that I have around me.
Now, you know, for me, learning and education is a big driver for me, and trying to embed that through the process of organizational behavior and groups and communities, like you've just said, like the coaching communities. How do you see continuous learning or coach, more specific coach education, not just the community support, contributing to that resilience that coaches need to build moving forward?
Keeps you fresh, doesn't it? Even if you're looking at or you go to a workshop or you watch a webinar and you think, I already do that. That's okay, because it's affirmation that other people are doing that too. But there might be contextualization that you can take from what someone else is doing. And I think one of the things I learned from my mother is constantly learning, educating, watching others, finding out what I can do better. I think coaches who are self-reflective will often find themselves in a situation where they're looking to see how they can improve. And that self-reflection means it's not just about hammering yourself. It's about, we're doing this well, this is what I, you know, I think we need to work on as a team. And then the takeaway is, what else is someone doing, or what else is out there that's going to help me be able to do that and contribute to my team environment? As coaches, that's why we're there. We're part of that team, and we have a role within that team. So one of the things I've always done is look for opportunities to learn, whether it's a workshop with Nolene Totua and you trundle along to a cold netball centre and sit there for a couple of hours, or whether it's actually doing formal education. And I've always done formal education right from when I started teaching in primary school, and you continue to keep learning. One of the things that Yvonne Willering, who's a fabulous coach, a lifetime coach, said, you know, don't ever think you know everything, because that's when you get stuck, you know. So that ability to stay fresh. Now, she's been around netball for, I'm not going to say how long, because that would be horrible. But if you think about the fact she's still in netball Silver Ferns camps now, she's kept herself current, because when she was playing for the Silver Ferns in the 70s, it was a very different game. So she's kept herself at the forefront of how the sport has changed. And that's how you stay current. You keep evolving, you keep developing, you keep innovating, you keep learning. One of the people that I follow, and some of the students know that I've been a great reader in classes, the Wayne Bennett Don't Die With the Music in Your Book. And I have been known, if you look at the dog-eared pages, to read this out loud to my tertiary classes, like they're in primary school, because there are little moments that you can learn from other coaches, I think, that are really rich. And anyone who knows me knows that if you talk about Wayne Bennett, I'm likely to listen. But the reason for that is because he also constantly evolves. He's a 70 plus man and one of the most confrontational sports in the world. And he's taken success wherever he's gone. So he's been at this club and started it. He's moved on to another. But wherever he's gone, he's taken success with him. So when you read from a coach like that, you watch a coach like that, it's not about mimicking what they do. It's about learning what they've done that's helped them be successful, and thinking about what you can take from that. And that continual education, I think, is one of the reasons that those coaches stay involved in the sport, they stay current, and they stay valuable to the athletes. You know, you watch as athletes like Pied Pipers, and that coach goes there, athletes want to be with them, you know. So they create something that's not just about the sport, it's something far richer than that. But that only comes from continuing to develop.
Yeah, and you're talking about that continuous education, continuous learning, and staying current, which is key, and it's really key in sport. But is that staying current? And what many coaches think nowadays, especially the younger coaches, staying current with the X and O's, the new strategies, the new plays, or do you see it a bit broader than that? Staying current with things beyond just the X and O's and the way that we're playing the sport.
Good point, Fran. Because there are always things that change, in particular in strength and conditioning, preparing them to be an athlete as opposed to just a player. I don't think sport changes that much. You know, there are refinements and there are strategic changes you can make, and you might come up with something innovative. Like, I always like to every year come up with something that's a little bit different that my defense do that no one else does. But actually, it's the environment, the culture, the how and the why you do things that is far more impactful. We all know people that are knowledgeable about the sport and have amazing game plans, but if you can't communicate it, and if you don't have the trust of the athletes to share the message, then no one's going to listen anyway. And as you know, the ethos for our school of sport is nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. You know, and that whole trust environment, it doesn't just happen. You don't just walk in there and go, hey guys, I'm the coach, trust me. And they go, yeah, absolutely. So the work on and the education that I'm seeing a lot more coaches doing is not around the skill and the technique and the conditioning. That comes as a byproduct of being involved in your sport and the involvement of the game and the technology that now comes with our sport. It's the coaches who are evolving themselves and how they look after the people that are in their care. You know, I don't work with netballers. I work with young ladies who are amazing people who choose to play netball, and that's how we happen to be brought together. But they're people first, and how do you look after those people? And the All Blacks in 2005 had a saying that great men make great All Blacks. Right. They look at the man first, and then how they can make a great All Black. So I think that in education that we're seeing now, it's very much about, it's shifted from the gumboots stalking up and down the sideline yelling to what am I doing that fits my athletes, my sport, my context, the development of these people that I'm working with, and how am I doing that? I was really fortunate to be part of a program called Performance Advanced Coaching for 2 years. And you have a mentor that's with you for that. And he was working with the Black Sticks hockey team at the time. So we weren't comparing notes on sport. We were comparing notes and ideas around how you work with people at different stages of performance. That's the richness. How you have those conversations when an athlete comes to you and goes, I'm over it. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. It's too hard. Or why aren't you picking me? I'm doing everything that you're asking. I want to be a professional athlete. What am I doing that's wrong? Or, you know, in tears because they can't take the commitment anymore because they're giving 7 days a week. So it was the richness of the discussions about how you care for people individually as well as in that collective team space. That was what I loved about the development I've been doing in the last, say, 10 years. How you affect the culture of your environment and how you affect how people see themselves and trust themselves in that performance space. Trust for me is huge, and it has multiple meanings across what you're doing. But ultimately, if players can walk away and say, I loved that season, you know, you nailed it, because it's not just about, I really enjoyed myself. But the meaning behind that is that you actually hit the nail on all of those performance objectives, the enjoyment objectives, their own milestones or KPIs that you were looking for. You know, if they say that was an amazing season, I loved playing in this team, I really enjoyed this aspect, then you're winning. So yes, friend, continuing education is a much bigger picture. And I'd like to think that most of my time is now not about the strategic X's and O's. It's actually more about looking after the athlete and then how we challenge them in that space.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about how did you define success, but I think you've nailed it in that last bit, that success is how the athlete, a real athlete-centered approach, how the athlete finds their journey. I really think that performance is measured by when the athlete is challenging themselves at the maximum level of their skill level. And the gift that we may have as coaches, if we're able to move that skill level a bit more so they can actually grow in that challenge, so they can increase their performance. But at the end of the day, the success will not come from the result. The result will be a byproduct of what that performance at the determined skill level of your athlete or your cohort of athletes were able to achieve, and be able to be self-reflective and to actually go back and look at success from that way. That you go, well, you know what? I got extraordinary success from this group, from this team, though we didn't win. We had a 5-5 season, but it could still be an extraordinarily successful season. And that's where the coaches need to have that knowledge of self-reflection. I think that's hugely important. You said, really caught me that you said that you celebrate success, but you move on very quickly. You said this a while ago, but you let, you let go of success very quickly, but you don't let go of situations that you think you could have done better or your athletes could have done better with your support. Now, my question in regards to this bit, Mitchie, is how do you not let that, or does that affect or determine how you're going to be coaching them moving forward? If it's hard for you to let go of what you could have done better, does that determine how you're coaching them moving forward and maybe distracting you from what their actual skill and challenge level is?
I can't let go if I don't have anything to move on to. Okay. So I haven't watched our grand final, even though I've got the Sky recording sitting there, because I can't do anything about it right now, because we don't start our pre-season until November. If I lost during the season, then it's easy. Right, we lost. Right, what are we analysing? Yes, okay, so this week. And there's a positive outcome from that loss because I can plan for it, I can move on. You know, there's something I can actually do with it. But when you lose like a final at the end of the season, you're sitting there going, right, what can I do with that? And I have to park it because I know I can't actually shift myself out of that space until I'm in that space again. And I can go, right, okay, so what was the learning out of that? And you're right. I can't let go because I hate thinking I've let people down. I hate thinking that I haven't done the best that I possibly could, because that's what I'm supposed to add in my value to a team. I always hated thinking that I could have done something better. And I guess that's that perfectionist side. Well, not perfectionist, but that excellence side. If I haven't met that standard of excellence, oh, well, why not? Why didn't you? So I've always been the type of person where I could cope with a loss as a player if I came off with blood and, you know, maybe a lost tooth or whatever, because I knew that my teammates would look at me and go, yeah, Mitchie did everything she could. And I go, phew. As long as my teammates knew I gave everything I have, I'm okay. But I've always struggled as a coach with that because I can't bleed on the court for them. You know, like my sideline effect is how well have I helped prepare you for that performance? And if I haven't done that, what did I miss? It's like, come on, Mitchie, why didn't you do? You know you're supposed to trust your instincts. So, yeah, it's that questioning and finding out what I can do better. And if I haven't got a space to move on to, then I do harbor it. I've been well known for holding. I have a memory like you wouldn't believe, and I can just hold on to something forever. And I do that to myself. I literally hold on to it until I have a moment to be able to shift that space. So finals where I lose are just awful because I have to wait for preseason to be able to shift out of that space again.
I want to move you a little bit into that transition space from losing the final into the preseason, the review, the season review. Can you talk to us about what's the importance of reviewing that season, reviewing your players, reviewing yourself in that postseason to set the new challenges? And how do you spin off those new challenges going into the next season, especially after a context of losing a final?
In different contexts, different application. So as you said, I coach across different platforms. And so I coach at St. Kentigan's College. And so our review is often what went well, who we got retained from year 13, you know, they've gone, who we got coming through. And often our planning is 2 years in advance so we can see who it is that's coming through as year nines, year tens, what's our succession planning. So it's a kind of a revolving door of players that you're reviewing. And it's actually quite exciting in that school space. And I've always really loved it because there's the ones that you're developing and you're seeing shift space, and that's what your review is about. How well did we shift them into a new space? Are we preparing them for life after school if they're a year 13? Have we done the best we can at preparing them for the next step if that's what they're doing? Have we continued to play them in a position that's actually going to disadvantage them when they move out of school? For example, yes. Knowing that when they move into out of school, they're not going to be playing this position. So have we done them favors? So one of the things that we do in our review,
huge one in the rugby space,
setting them up for success outside of school. And one of those things is in year 12 and 13, we deliberately try to plan for after school. So we've got one player right now who's a professional netball player in the ANZ competition. When she joined us, she was a goal defence. And we played her there, and then we shifted her wing defence. And then we saw that potential and shifted her into that midcourt because we knew that if we'd continued to play her here, she was never going to go anywhere. Only because of physical presence, stature, size, the ability to be able to control a space, all of those things, you go, right, where's her best fit? It's here. That's where she plays now. In that ANZ space, straight out of high school. But you're right, friend, there's actually, you have to identify and you have to be prepared to think much bigger picture than the immediate picture. And that's what we do in that school space. In the performance development space, where I am at the moment with the Northern Comets, one of the things that we're reviewing is the success of, because we can have returning players now, they're adults, so we get to keep some of them. But one of the measures of success that we're reviewing straight after our season, and then a couple of weeks ago when we were meeting about pre-season, was the level of success where we've helped players shift into a new space, because this platform gives them the chance to be identified. So did we give them the best opportunity through either our game plans, tactics, or combinations to show ANZ or Silver Fern coaches that this player is someone that you should have a look at? And then if you put them in your environment, that we've done enough in that space to show behavior, attitudinal, social, emotional, and psychological strengths that mean that they're worth the investment as a person as well. And we look back and went, wow, so we've got one that's been signed to the Pulse, one that's going to the Tactics, one that's been signed with the Stars and will probably stay with us. Oh, one that's gone to New Zealand under 21s. You know, so when we were reviewing the season, part of that review process is reviewing the individual player success and shift. The player that was coming back from injury and was able to literally stay the whole season to the point where she's going, I can't wait for the season. Now, previous seasons in ANZ and whatever, she hasn't finished a season. She finished a season with us, you know? So there's all of these different wins where your management team, which includes your physio, your manager, your conditioner, as well as the coaches, we've done a great job at shifting these players to a space to the point where now, as we plan our preseason, we know the players that we're going to get back. We know the players that want to join us from other franchises. And we know how far they've come as people. There's little things too, isn't there? Like some of them have started university. And, you know, that's a mind trip for some of them. They come back, they come to training and they're absolutely exhausted because they've been at uni all day, and then they come and they go, oh, school was never that hard because class finishes after 3, or they've got jobs. And you know, where school meant that you'd go to 9 to 3 and you could train at school and everything was in that one place, you drive to work and then you drive to training and then you drive somewhere else, you know, everything's just a little bit more challenging. So you see adulting happening and the challenges. So getting a year or two of adulting under their belt, you see a shift too. And that's part of that review process that we look at, is when they join us, it's not just about the cognitive space that they're in a in a netball space. It's where are they as a person now after adulting for a couple of years? So yeah, review is critical. And that's the part I enjoy because it allows me to shift on from whatever happened. Or it does remind me to celebrate all of the great stuff that did happen. And great stuff doesn't happen incidentally. It doesn't happen by accident. You know, success isn't just lucky us, the guy that's been losing us the whole life. You know, it's like, it's not, success is not for the fortunate. Success is for the people who worked hard. You know, you don't always get what you deserve, you get what you work for. And you know, these skills have worked really hard. So part of that review is, when we worked hard, did we work hard on the right things? And are we going to focus on those things now? Are we going to focus on new things? So yeah, review's been critical, but I really enjoy that part because it gets your fires burning again, you know, and it gets you all revved up for what happens next. So I think reviews for a coach are also part of churning up your enthusiasm again and reminding you about why you do this. So whilst it's very good reflective learning, I also think it's that time where we start to shift gears and go, oh yeah, this is why we do this. This is exciting. I can't wait for this to start again.
You know, from my kind of strategic business background, I really appreciate what reviews are as part of a strategic management process that that the coach, and I love that you mentioned the importance of that management team that comes on board, because it allows you to look at all your resources, look at how you've used your resources, what have been those outcomes, and actually allows you to now plan forward what you're going to be doing again with those resources if they've changed, how you're going to be challenging yourself, how your skills as a coach might have grown or differed from one season to another. So it's a great strategic management process, and I believe there's where the integration of different skills. I mean, sometimes we look at coaching as just coaching a sports-related occupation, and it integrates strategic management, it integrates human behavior, it integrates obviously the knowledge, that tactical knowledge of the sport itself, which we've been talking about. I think I know the answer to this because I've known you now for quite a few years, but how active are you in regards to, and I'll use the technical term, journaling what's happening with your athletes, with your team, with your season, and how do you use that journaling moving forward?
That is critical. Yeah, absolutely. And Fran, I have a box behind me of notebooks over the years, and I refuse to throw them out because there's always some learning that comes from that. We go, that's right. So the last 2 years, though, using notebook forms that allow you to share with your coaching team has been really critical. So Timu Putter and I use Notebook, and it means that we can share lesson plans, we can share reviews. I review in-game as well as reviewing post-training, post-game, and then obviously in collective times when we're doing either team management meetings and then reviewing. I review in-game by having my iPad set up per quarter. And I have a list of things that I'm reviewing in that quarter. And then I literally tick them off as I go or I make notes. So I'm literally setting myself up to be able to review after each quarter, because I get 3 minutes to speak to the players or my portion of the players when we're in a break. So I want to make sure that whatever it is that I'm reviewing and feeding back to the players is actually dedicated to what our game plan or our training was on this week. So I deliberately set up a review every quarter. And then even if the last quarter I don't get a chance to talk to the players until post-match, it's still really important because those were goals that we had. They were performance situations that we'd set up. So that's part of that walking up and down after a game where you're reviewing exactly in that moment what happened. And there are some things that need immediate feedback. And we know that from research that there is some specificity and immediacy that must come with some feedback. And that's where you get to know your players. Who needs it now? Who needs to know specific detail? Or who just wants to go?
Yeah.
And if you go, that player goes, Mitch is happy. Okay, we'll talk on Monday at recovery. Whereas other players are like, oh my God, Mitch, remember how we talked about that rebounding and blocking is my goal? I feel like I missed two or three. And it's like, well, yeah, you did. But you also missed it to the 7-foot shooter. So what are we going to do? It can't just be you, you know? So sometimes players need that. But review for me is definitely a staged process. Each quarter, post-game, post-training. And the reason for that is because I want to make sure that anything that I notice, I observe, or that might be helpful is actually about the athlete and being able to give them something that helps their development. It might be something really, really small. So when I was working with the Northern Stars, you know, I'm working with some pretty amazing athletes, you know, Silver Ferns and everything. And I noticed one thing about one of these players that I was working with. And when we were warming down, just in that moment, I said to her, hey, did you know that when you come out the left side of the court that you always go with your right side instead of taking a left leg lead? And she goes, oh my God, all these years I've been playing, I always wondered why I preferred going out the right. No one ever told me that I didn't have a left leg lead. So throughout that season, what happened was just in that one moment, because I was watching enough to be able to, she was like, just yell at me. So those review moments are really critical for those little light bulb moments. It aren't just about the learning, it's actually about the connection you're making with the athlete. And it's about that trust. Trusting you, but trusting themselves to do the job. And you know, ultimately as a coach, that's what you want. You want them to trust themselves and who they are and what they're doing to be able to go, yeah, you nailed it because you did it. So reviewing is a huge part of what I do. And the ability to share. Now, one of the things that I was challenged with, and Tema Putt is so good at this, she's constantly looking at ways that we can be better and challenge ourselves, is we would rank players every week. So we have a squad of 16 at this development level that are getting ready for, you know, professional. And she would literally, she said, you know what we need to do? We need to rank our players on a weekly basis. We have a squad of 16. We can only pick 10. So every week, let's start ranking players. And it sounded like a great idea. So we started doing it. After an hour sitting there one night, I messaged her and I went, oh my God, I'm failing at this. I can't do it. She went, thank goodness you said that. This is awful. But what it did teach us is how emotionally we buy into, you know, ranking players and saying, oh, Fran, oh God, I want to say he's number one, but he's not. I'm actually right now seeing him as probably the third option in that position, but I'm seeing him develop in this one. So when you start physically putting a number next to a player, what it does is it gives you the harsh reality of, I picked Fran to be the number one in this position. He's not right now. What am I doing to help his development? And what's happening with this player that has shifted their development? So just those little different ways of reviewing what you're doing has been a really good challenge. As confronting as it is, sometimes, like we all know, you know, being uncomfortable is a learning space. That's where the magic happens. That's been a really good learning for me about constantly looking at how we're reviewing, working with our players. So the ranking system is one that we started this season and we're probably going to keep working on because it is confronting. It's confronting because it makes you honest about what you're doing and how you're seeing your players.
Yeah, this is really cool because, I mean, you've been coaching for years. I had a great experience through AFL New Zealand in regards to nailing that review per quarter. So I, when you said that review per quarter, it really hit a spot because I had really great advice through a guy that you know, Mick Coulthart, and I've actually incorporated that over the years that, you know what, you only have limited time. But if you have a framework that you've set up yourself for to actually pinpoint what is it that you're going to review, what feedback you're going to give to either encourage, correct, support the athlete that's on the field or on the court, it will actually better your coaching, but it will, at the end of the day, better that performance of your athlete that's actually playing the game. And it's keeping it honest because it is at the end of the day, a type of framework that you're using. So you're not just going off the cusp of this going, oh, I think it's this, I think we got to improve. No, it's actually some framework that also the athletes under pressure, under fatigue, they can connect cognitively to very quickly because they know where it's coming from. They know the structure of it. And that helps build trust because you're not going to come out of left field and you're going to replace a player without having that framework that they're used to in that coaching context that you're providing them. So everything cannot be framework because we're working with people. And like you're saying, the development changes and everything. But I want to take you back into the learning and developing as a coach. Learning how to framework, how to stage scenarios for our coaching, for our player development, for different situations that we have either on a training or on a game. How important is it to go through that learning process as a coach?
The more that I've traveled, the more I've seen how important it is, particularly for the athletes who are on that performance development pathway. They like to be aware of any contingency. They don't like to be surprised. And if you can limit the amount of times that they're surprised, then it means that they feel prepared. And that security of feeling prepared, remember we talked about, if this happens, this is what we're going to do. And we've all had scenarios like the fire alarm going off, you know, for the Memphis Grizzlies the other day. We had that. We had an evacuation in the middle of a semi-final for New Zealand secondary schools. We were literally standing outside going, But we actually framed scenarios around that in preparation. So the girls went, that's right, we go outside, have a moment to download. What the heck just happened? Then it's, how much time have we got? Let's do some low impact stuff for now. And then we'll get a warning. So there's actually a plan. So little things too, like sometimes you need to account for the stuff that you don't think is ever going to happen, but you want to plan for it anyway. So like the coach being sidelined or kicked off the court, that's always a good one. And I did that one as a surprise in a training where I literally said to the umpire, I'm going to have a go at you. And then I want you to remove me from courtside. And this was in preparations for an age group nationals. And he goes, oh my God, I love that. So literally during the game, he kicked me out and I had to leave the courtside. I had to leave the arena. And what that meant was the players had to cope with the disruption, potential embarrassment, but I've gone. What are you going to do? It can't just be the coach that runs everything. So afterwards, when the players reviewed that, they went, oh my God, I wasn't sure. One of them started crying because she was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? So part of those scenarios and case studies and things like that was setting up the what ifs. So I call them what ifs. Setting up as many what ifs as I can that allow them to be prepared for anything. It gives them the security to not be surprised and to feel like they've got an idea about what they could do. And ultimately, that's what we want. We want people to be in a situation that when something challenging comes up, they think, well, what can I do? Not go, oh, and freeze. It's got to be about, okay, damn, that just happened. Right, what can we do? And of course, people are going to have a shock moment, but then it's what's your next step? So it's about preparing athletes, teams to be able to go, what can I do now? You know, and just put them in that frame of mind. It doesn't always work. God, doesn't always work for me. You know, sometimes you need a chance to rant and rave and have a bit of a tantrum before you go, as you and I both know, friend. sometimes you need a bit of a tantrum to be able to let the emotion out, and once the emotion's gone, you can go, right, what are we going to do? And to be pragmatic, sometimes you have to get rid of the emotion first to allow your brain to function that way. So yeah, those scenarios have been really important, particularly school, not so much, because school's always very controlled. You know, like you've seen the school competition, it's a very organized, controlled environment, and those contingencies are more around, what if this player comes on? What if this happens? Whereas the higher up you move out of that school space, it's very much about what other contingencies happen because it's a far more open variable space. So yeah, I know the athletes quite enjoy those what if scenarios though. We had one session where we brought in a whole lot of like random sponsors, family members, plus our own family members dressed up in the opposition colors. and started yelling at them, simply because we knew that we were traveling to Invercargill. Are the most parochial, honestly. They'll stab you with their knitting needles. They are so passionate about their team that you can't hear anything. You can't hear yourself talk. You know, you're fighting for everything. So part of the preparing for that was literally having people yelling at you all through training that week. It was brilliant.
I've actually done that. I've taken a speaker, and when the boys were practicing their line out, yeah. especially in our first 15 competition in Auckland, that the it gets so noisy, yes. and it's so supportive. And we were playing a big game against one of the big rival schools in Auckland. So I decided to show up at training. I asked the coaches, I decided to show up at training with a speaker. So while the boys were practicing their line outs, I started calling them names and making fun of them. And then I've started putting on the speaker the chants from the opposing school. And they turned around, they go, "Friend, what are you doing?" They started cracking up. I go, "Why are you cracking up? Why are you asking me? You're practicing lineouts. Stay in the game, stay focused." And it was good, because actually on Saturday, exactly that happened. They had the chance. They were right in front of the lion, throwing a line out, and they were actually able to focus on the line out and get it right. And it's those little things that we do that we think we have to think outside the square, create those scenarios. But I want to relate this a little bit to something that we teach in class. And sometimes you go, why are we teaching that? How does it relate to coaching? But I think your example of the fire alarm, or you getting thrown out by the umpire, actually relates to it, which is the Tuchman's model about the forming, storming, norming, and performing. And actually you getting thrown out at this makeshift training by the umpire is you've set up the storm, and it's created a storm for the team that was never thinking about how are we going to face the situation? How are we going to prepare? And now you actually roll out the norms. So when something like that or similar happens, you have norms in place that has buy-in from the complete group, and you can actually focus on your performance. So that's just to exemplify a little bit the conversations that we sometimes have in class with our students, and why we're explaining these theories and how they actually relate directly to the experiences that you have on court or on the field. We bring in Tuchman's model just to actually shape those scenarios to actually drive performance, because we know how a group will achieve performance and what process they need to travel through. But to travel through that process, we need to actually achieve certain things, like, for example, a norming stage, which is fantastic. Mitchie, I know you're really busy. It's been close to an hour now that we've been together on this chat. Really, really appreciate that you have been online to actually share your coaching experience, your knowledge. I have a huge privilege that you can come into my class and talk to our students in regards to coaching, which I know is one of your strong passions. But again, just thank you so much. Hopefully a lot of people listen to this. We're definitely going to be using this in class with our students, but hopefully also across different high schools. If they wanted their students to know a little bit more about coaching, or here you have the insight. You have the insight of a seasoned professional coach and educator, Michelle Parsons. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today, Mitchie.
Thank you, Fran. And just to sign off, I would say to people, find what you love to do. That's what you and I do. We love what we do, and that's what gets you up in the morning. And when you move into coaching, find your hero, find your role model. And those could be different people. For me, my hero is my dad, and my role models are people like Wayne Bennett and Phil Jackson, inspirational and aspirational. And I'd like to think that anyone that came into any of our classrooms, Fran, or was a part of our team and part of our school of sport, that they would find either someone who's inspirational, aspirational, a hero or a role model, or someone who's there to be your greatest supporter and cheerleader. So if anyone is interested in what we do and how we do it, we're about changing people's lives in a positive and effective way and getting them on their dream pathway. So thank you very much for inviting me and for being part of an amazing team who are constantly looking at how we can do things better. And that's what I love about what we do. So thank you.
Awesome, Michi. If you want to get in contact with Michelle, her email is going to be right below, so you can contact her. Also, join us by subscribing, liking, and doing all that fun stuff to podcasts. But most importantly, share, especially today, Michelle's revelations and stories around coaching and her experience are of huge, huge value. So if you're a coach and you care about another coach, share this podcast, and we're happy to have more conversations with you moving forward. Until next week, team, nice talking to you, and thank you so much. Bye.